You know, I mean, obviously, a thing like this, the way we'll sell it is that we'll get people to lend them, borrow them, and then they won't be able to return them. it's like giving a free shot of cocaine or something like that.
Free for 6 months and give it back if you can.
Yeah. Very addictive.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, we should maybe try. Try and get going. Are we ready to go? All right. This is an oral history interview with Dr. Eugene Garfield in Philadelphia on 16 November 1987. I'm Arnold Thackeray, and with me is Jeffrey Sturcio. Gene, can you begin by talking a little bit about your family background and very early years?
I don't remember what, if anything, we said about all this before.
We're now taking it down for real.
Oh, you mean
That's all here in note form to send us down the track.
Oh, I see. So, all right. Well, I was born in the Bronx. My mother and father were children of immigrants, but they were both born in New York. In Manhattan, Lower East Side. And I was the second child. My mother was married at the age of 15. And by the time I was born, she was 18 when I was born. By that time, however, my mother was no longer even living with my father, so he left her when she was pregnant, matter of fact.
Your mother's and father's names were?
Oh, my mother was Edith. Wolf was her maiden name, and my father's name was Henry Garfinkel. So, with K-L-E. And so I did not live with my mother alone. She worked in various jobs. I was placed in a, in fact, I was the first child in the, what's called the First Ladies Jewish Nursery in the Bronx in 1925 on Fulton Avenue, not far from Cortona Park, which still stands, the park there. And somebody actually sent me a photograph of the street that I lived on not too long ago, and it's unbelievable to see some of the changes. But basically, the structure, I think, because it was a tenement that has still survived. Most of those tenement buildings are still there. Apparently, across the street, the projects have come in, but I can remember this. Even though I stayed there only till about the age of 4 or 5, I can remember that neighborhood as vividly as yesterday. And my mother worked during the day. She came home after we went to the nursery, and then this went on for. She got a little bit of help from her brother, who was still, I guess, a budding, clothing manufacturer. He was only a few years older than she was at the time. But we lived there until it was about 5 or 6, 7. Then later on, we moved. With the encouragement of my uncle, I think we moved to one of the West Bronx, which was, a vastly improved neighborhood. It was like we were going from, I don't know what you call it today, because I don't think the ghetto was the tenements or slums were anything like they are today. I mean, somehow it doesn't seem that way anyhow. And maybe so many people live that way, but we went to a more modern neighborhood in the West Bronx that was called High Bridge. Incidentally, I went to the public school, and I was told that although I went to public school number 2, that originally it was the number 1. I don't know whether that means public school number 1 in the Bronx or in the city or what. And then when I moved to the other side, I went to a school called Public School 11, number 11. And it was located, we always walked to school. It was located about 3 or 4 blocks from where I lived. And we lived on a street in the West Bronx called Woody Crest Avenue. And I've written about this somewhere, but right on the same street was a branch of the New York Public Library. And I think it was called the Woody Crest branch. I'm not sure. It was at the, where Woody Crest and Shakespeare Avenue came together at kind of an angle. And that was very significant in my life because I used to spend a lot of time in that library. It was kind of like a haven. I grew up poor. We try and earn money doing a lot of jobs. Not unusual to. My mother got very angry when she found out once I worked for a quarter for a whole day in a laundry helping run a press, a mangling, shemangle, whatever they call it. And I delivered orders, grocery stores, and things like that. I don't know what sort of things you're interested in hearing about in that age, I was very much under the influence of my mother's brothers. She had 5 of them. And the youngest was only 6 years older than I am. In fact, he visited me here just about a month ago. First time he'd ever been here. And on the other hand, let's say her oldest brother was kind of the father figure in the family, although my grandfather was alive. And I had very little contact with my father. The first time I saw him was when I was 5 years old. And although I had visited his mother when I was a few years old, and I remember being very frightened of that experience. My uncles, as they became the father figures in my family, and in particular, 3 of them were radicals, always involved in labor organizing or socialist, communist politics. It was sort of the 2 sides of the family. My uncle was a capitalist, and they were always opposed to that. So there was a lot of that kind of turmoil going on. My interest in science was cultivated by them, also classical music, everything. They were very much, in fact, atheism was probably part of it. I was discouraged from going to any kind of religious school, and I did not, what most Jewish kids that age would have gone to Bar Mitzvah, I was not. And next male influence in my life was when my mother got married a second time. She married an Italian man, Ernest Garofano. And eventually my half-brother was born. I just spoke to him a few minutes ago. And he's about 12 years younger than I am. And so my stepfather came, and we moved across the street to a bigger apartment. He was a very interesting influence in my life, but he was not an intellectual influence. He was somebody who just was a very good person. He was very kind. Assumed the role of the father in a way that my own had not. And so I eventually I finished grammar school at the age of about 13. I finished about a year ahead of the usual time. I went to Stuyvesant High School for the first year, and I guess I had pretty high grades on these Regents exams. Always had good grades in math. And I used to take the subway all the way down to 14th Street. It's quite a long ride, back and forth every day, and it was also, during certain times of the year, put me in proximity of being able to work for my uncle. And also, I had this rather ignominious task of going to visit my father's brother every week in order to pick up our support check.
From your father?
From my father. He did not condescend to put the check in the mail. That was too much trouble, and I developed a relatively close relationship with his brother, a man who I continued to see occasionally. And he ran a liquor store in Greenwich Village. And from the age of about 9 years on, I had to make that weekly trek down there. And so when I went to high school down in Union Square, I could walk across to Greenwich Village on my way home once a week, pick it up. And then during the summers, I worked for my uncle in the garment center, and which is a very hectic time of the year for that business. You're getting ready for the winter season. So I took clarinet lessons at Stuyvesant High School, and I remember buying my first clarinet down in the village somewhere. And I started working for my uncle Sam, and I remember
this,
my mother's oldest brother in the summer saying I was making eventually 30 cents an hour. That was the minimum wage. And I said to him, once, I'd like to get a raise. And he said, well, why? I said, well, I want to buy a clarinet. And he said, I'm not going to give you a raise, but as your uncle, I'll get you a clarinet. And so I think it cost me about $15 or something like that. And, Peddler was the brand. And I think they were made in Elkhart, Indiana. Eventually, though, for a combination of reasons, I guess either I didn't particularly like continuing to travel, or I wanted to study a second language. And the program at Stuyvesant, you had to take more science and less the other things. And I wasn't too excited by biology. I transferred schools, went up to DeWitt Clinton High School in the Bronx, which is the other end of the city. And eventually I graduated from Clinton, not without some problems. I was not a superstar student by any stretch of the imagination. And although I did well in math, I was always in fact, one experience I had, one of my uncles and his wife decided to take a trip to Florida, and I don't know how everybody agreed to it, but I was allowed to go along on this trip, and as a consequence of that, I failed one or two courses in high school. I think one of them was history, and the other was, I don't know what, and I had to make these courses up in the summertime. Which I subsequently did, but at the same time I got in a kind of a mood where I just wanted to take all the easy courses, and I saw that there were things that you could take for credit, like typing and printing and multigraphing, all these things which have proven very important in my business. I became a super typist, which I used many times in my life after that. Eventually I did graduate, and I was funny, we were talking about this just last week when I was in Denver, and I always had this hankering to go west. I used to read Zane Grey stories and a lot. And I had always romanticized the notion of that west. I applied to the University of Arizona and Colorado, and I was accepted in Boulder. In the summer of 42, I went out there, and I was going to be a chemical engineering major. I registered as a chemical engineering major.
What had given you that?
Pardon me?
What had given you that idea?
That's a very strange, difficult thing for me to explain. I don't know why I chose chemical engineering as a major. I sort of toyed with going to the Colorado School of Mines. I don't remember if I applied to get in or what. It was something. I always, the mining thing, I was much influenced by the literature my uncles gave me about the Wobblies and the old labor movement. And so I might have wanted to be a mining engineer, and maybe that had something to do with it. I just don't really. I had, at some point, I think my uncle had a chemistry set. I never had one myself. That uncle, oddly enough, who had a great aptitude for science, wound up getting a business degree, and it was a great disappointment to me. None of my uncles, except that one, graduated from college, and he was sort of my buddy and wound up, as I said, taking a business degree, which... So I just don't know. I got out there, and then in college, I had to deal with things like mechanical engineering as a mechanical drawing, and I never found that kind of thing very interesting, and I didn't have much of an aptitude for it. I also met my first wife there, and.
In Boulder.
She was older than I am. She was 7 years older. And was a physics major. And we were in the same, that's where I met her, in chemistry class, as a matter of fact. And although I didn't know that she would be introduced to me later by somebody else, I did. But she was in the same lecture hall, and I used to see her come in every day. But that summer, the story I told in Denver, in fact, I had it written out in about 100 words, a friend of mine, my uncle, had a friend who was a labor organizer. His name was Carl Campbell, who eventually became a professor of economics in the Midwest somewhere. He was a very interesting man. He was an albino. But he was a union organizer. And when I went out there, my uncle said, go see Carl. He'll take care of you during the summer, because I'd gone out there early in the school. And I wound up, as a consequence of that, he got me a job down at Pando, Colorado, which is not far from Leadville. And that was when I got my first job as a laborer, and working in this construction camp, which was building an army. Ski troop camp, okay, and which eventually became Camp Hale. And I stayed there for only a couple of weeks, and then I got sick, and then I eventually went back to Denver. It was quite a harrowing experience for me, never having done that kind of physical labor. It was 12 hours a day, and temperature extremes were awful. But I survived. But then I finally went back to Boulder, and I went to school. But I stayed in school for 6 months. There's a lot of details left out of this, but part of it was eventually my biological father had agreed to pay for part of my college, and when I said I was quitting, they were upset about that. But I just loved, and I wasn't, and I wanted to get away. The war was on, and I and got this kind of patriotic fever and wasn't quite ready for the Army. I was 17, I guess, when I got to college, and then I wasn't quite 18. So I went out to California to work in the shipyard. And my wife's sister was out there. We were friends. And I worked in the shipyards. Eventually I got trained as a welder. And then I went back for a while to Colorado because I knew that I was on my way to getting a draft age. And I stopped and I worked in Denver. They had what they call an inland shipyard.
That's inland.
They just made the sections of the ships there in this place. And I worked as a welder. And a friend of mine, Rick, who I'd made a friend of at school, was the son of a congressman. Richard Aspinwall. We worked together there, I remember. And then finally I left and went back to New York at the age of, and I volunteered to join the Merchant Marine. But before I had gone down to the Merchant Marine School, the draft board got me. Like a darn fool, I was a young kid, I thought, you know, this card came in, I had to respond instantly, and I went and they drafted me before I got into the Merchant Marine. Then I wound up in the infantry. Then I went to basic training, and during basic training is when I found out when my typing would become the first interesting example of how it could help me. Because I was, before very long, I was offered the job as a company clerk, which I didn't take. But what happened was, after basic training, you could volunteer for the paratroops or for the ski troops, mountain troops. So I volunteered for the mountain troops so I could get back to Colorado and see my girlfriend. And that happened. They accepted me. And I went back to Camp Hale. And was in that outfit for about many months. And then eventually what happened was they left there and they went to Texas. And in Texas I signed up for officer training school. And then I went to officer training school and for about 13 weeks and then there was something going on with the, bulge, and they started pulling people over into the overseas, port of embarkation. But I never did finish the officer's training school, and when I got to Fort George Meade, I was sent to the hospital. I was diagnosed as having ulcers. And I'll never forget when the Army, the major or somebody, the medical doctor comes down, and my mother comes down to visit me, and she said, the doctor says to my mother, Mrs. G, I have the sad news to tell you, I'm going to have to let your son out of the Army. And my mother started crying. And she, he thought that she was, you know, really super patriot, you know, something like that. But it was already, by the way, it was already June 1945, or April, and so the war was practically over anyhow. But, so when I got out of the Army, I went back to summer school right away. I started planning for college, and I went to Columbia University that summer, and I studied French. And then I applied to school. By this time, during the time I was in the Army, my wife-to-be was already at Berkeley. And she was working at the, in fact, Lawrence Radiation Lab. And had switched from physics to medical physics. And eventually she became a pre-med student. And when I got out...
She graduated sometime.
She graduated in physics at Boulder. Yeah. And when I got out to California, we eventually got married, and we were both street medical together, but she was a whiz student, straight A's. However, so we're in Berkeley for 2 years. That's when I took my first chemistry course with Joel Hildebrand. As a matter of fact, I was in the, I described it somewhere, but I remember Professor Hildebrand very well. In fact, we had some correspondence long after I graduated. He wrote to me once about the citation index and wanted to know if I could help him use it to uncover what he thought was the over-mathematization of chemistry. I don't think it was very helpful to him on that, but nevertheless. So I took all the usual undergraduate pre-med courses. I was not a particularly good student. And after 2 years, my wife, my son was born in 1947, January. My oldest son, Stephen, he was born, in fact, in Stanford University Hospital, which was then located in San Francisco. And we came east because my wife was accepted at Temple University Medical School. And then when I got to New York, we moved into an apartment that my mother had had. And my wife announced that she was splitting with somebody else who had been a friend of ours. And they are still married, God bless them. They were obviously meant for each other. And he was a physicist also that she'd met out there. And I'll never know to this day, it was people's misguided loyalties, why she married me when all along she was in love with him. But people do those things, you know.
So this was summer of 47, where were you?
Well, she had met him in 45, in Berkeley, I guess, at the lab. He's still alive. He's a very nice guy. He was a protege of Oppenheimer, I think, and eventually got his PhD under him at Princeton. I don't know the details. I'm not sure. And so we had some very, very difficult time, and as a consequence of that, I obtained the custody of our child.
And that was very unusual for that era, wasn't it?
Yeah, but actually she probably preferred it that way, although she wouldn't have refused, I don't think, because she really, well, she'd have dragged him up in Philadelphia. They were living down here. She was going to medical school. How she would have managed, I'm not sure. What she did was, in fact, we had a stepson. I had a stepson. She'd been married before. In fact, twice before. Very unusual woman. And she sent one of the children off to live with her mother. In fact, made a deal with him. So for that purpose, and Grandma was happily willing to help support her through school as long as she had the child there to live with her. And she'd have done the same with my son. But that's how I got interested in child care. And I could not get my son into a child care facility because the rules and regulations were that if you had any female in your family able or willing to take care of your child, the city wasn't going to allow you to bring him to child care. So I tried to, first I tried a private one, and then eventually I had a temporary nanny I hired when I was going.